Hey, it's Rob Lightfoot, proud two-time alum of Rowan University.
And I'm Jessica Kennedy, also a two-time Rowan alum. And you're listening to
Beyond the Brown and Gold.
Rowan Radio 89.7 WGLS-FM presents Beyond the Brown and Gold, a show that highlights the lives and memories of Glassboro State and Rowan University alumni. Now, here are your hosts, Rob Lightfoot and Jessica Kennedy.
Rob, on today's show, we had Dr. Kathleen Wickham.
She wasn't always a doctor, though, Jess.
She wasn't.
No.
But she is now. She was a class of 1971 grad from Glassboro State College, currently a professor of journalism in the School of Journalism and New Media at the University of Mississippi.
Yeah, she left us a while ago, and like Jersey.
Right.
And yes, went south.
She did. But before she did journalism.
Yep.
Here, she worked for a couple local...
A bunch of spots.
Yeah, a couple local newspapers, including one in Atlantic City, which is actually why she was back on campus today. You'll hear more about that. And she's an author and just an all-around good time. Kathleen, welcome to the studios today. You came all the way from...
I came from Oxford, Mississippi.
Okay, so a little ways away.
Yes.
All right. Well, when was the last time you were back here on campus?
Actually, a year ago. I came back and I met with several members of the WIT and a few others and had a tour of Hollybush.
Oh, that's super fun. So the WIT must be something that you were involved in while you were here. Take us back to how you got to Glassboro State.
Oh, well, to how I got to Glassboro State is just a simple little story. I was essentially what today we call a first-gen student. Mm-hmm. And my father said that I could go to any state college in New Jersey, and I chose Glassboro because it was the furthest away.
Furthest away from?
I grew up in Phillipsburg, Warren County.
Far away.
And not a whole lot of people came south in terms of going to Glassboro. So
yeah.
That was it.
That was the reasoning. Hey, everybody has a reason for coming, right?
Yeah.
And did you want to experience college and try to like use it as an experience to like mature? What was the attraction here?
As a first-gen student, my father's mandate was he wanted his daughters, there were three of us, to get college degrees so that no matter what happened to us in life, we would be able to take care of ourselves.
My dad, too. Me and my sister were first-gens, and that was a big thing for him, too, that he didn't want anybody to have to take care of us.
That is right. And at that point, it was still that for women, you had pretty much two choices, either a teacher or a nurse.
Right.
And I was destined to be a teacher. I started doing volunteer work at the YWCA in Easton, Pennsylvania, teaching, being a camp counselor. Mm. So that was obviously where my career path was supposed to take me.
So what did you study while you were here at Glassboro State?
Well, I had a strange major. Because of my experience as a camp counselor and working at the YW, I really liked the middle school age kids. And we had a major in, I can't remember if it was middle school or junior high certification. You could either do math science or English history. So I did the English history one. And also had a second benefit. You didn't have to take a foreign language.
Oh. Now, did you like English history?
I loved it.
Okay.
I loved
it.
Did
you like one more than the other, though?
History.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I teach media history now. But they were my two favorite areas. And that was the other thing. I couldn't choose which one. And I was able to, through electives, take enough courses to also be certified to teach high school in both subjects.
Oh, wow. So you had a good resume when you came out. You were able to do as much as you needed to be able to do.
That's right.
Now, when you came down here from Phillipsburg, you're obviously, back then, you're not seeing this in a guidebook on like online. You know, you're not seeing Glassboro. So you came down here to the country and thought, what?
I was on my own. I was in college. I was a college girl. And I knew right away that I was going to get involved in campus activities. I tested out of English 101, and we were given a choice of three courses to take: creative writing, broadcast, or journalism. And so I opted for journalism.
Mm.
It's all making sense.
Yeah, now we're putting the piece together? This is good.
Among other reasons, the reason couldn't do broadcast is that at that time, women were not on broadcast.
Mm. Okay, so you couldn't even get on air at that time.
Right, and so I started working at the WIT as part of our coursework, and that's became my academic home.
So what did you do for the Wit? You did a lot of writing for the
Wit. I did reporting. I think I was the editorial editor 1 year. I think my senior year, I kind of had this funky title, something like executive editor. My roommate was the editor. So
that's convenient, right? You're just writing it in your dorm at night when you both can't sleep.
That's right. And I got to cover really great stories that fueled my passion for journalism. I knew by the end of my junior year, that's what I wanted to do. But Dad said, no, you were just getting the journalism major. And Dad said, no, fifth year.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
You got it. That's it.
It's like 4 years and you're done.
What were some of those stories, though, that you were
well,
making so far?
Well, you have to remember, I graduated in 1971. So every spring, we never knew if we were going to have final exams because of Vietnam War protests.
Oh, okay.
And then senior year, the faculty took a strike vote.
Oh, wow.
And that was my story. Were they going to go on strike? Would we have final exams? Would we have graduation?
Wow.
And don't leave us hanging. What happened?
They didn't go on strike.
Okay.
So we had those darn exams.
I know. I was going to say, great for the school. Kind of a bummer for the students that were hoping not to take a final.
So there was really engaging in important stories, not just campus life.
Yep.
Which is important, but it took me outside of campus life.
Do you think being here during the time of the Vietnam War, that must have been super impactful because there was so much change and going on in the world and so much growth actually as well. So
and that was the beginning when women were being told you can do things.
Yeah.
You can you don't have to just be, I hate to say just teachers and nurses, because I don't mean that as a sub major. Very important to have teachers and nurses, but you had more opportunities.
Yeah.
And this was also part of, I tell this story to my students. So my high school offered me a job teaching high school English. I had the contract in hand. Why? I was applying for newspaper jobs.
Okay.
And I was a very dutiful, I really never bucked the parents type of person. And I remember I was helping with the cleaning the dishes, and mom comes out in the kitchen and says, well, why don't you try teaching for a year? If you don't like it, go into journalism. And I very quietly said, why don't I try journalism for a year, and if I don't like it, I'll go into teaching.
Love that. You pushed back a little bit.
And what was their reaction?
She walked out of the room.
Oh, boy.
End of subject.
Yeah.
And so when I ended up teaching, you know what mom did? Told you so.
Oh, of course.
You were meant to be a teacher. I said, but not then. I was too young.
Yeah. You kind of had to, it seems like you needed to kind of blaze your own path because you came all the way here from, you know, North Jersey. You were kind of looking to set like your own path.
And talk about like the professors here who kind of helped shape some of your writing skills.
Well, the first one would be Ben Resnick,
yeah.
Who was who taught the journalism classes and was the Wit advisor. And he was definitely a mentor. He definitely encouraged all of us to do everything that we could do and gave us free rein to cover stories with all his support. So mm-hmm. Ben Resnick is certainly probably the most influential professor that I had. And the second one that I remember with great fondness was Dr. Mitchell, who taught English literature. And he was a cantankerous person. But for some reason, I got him. And, I mean, he would come out with stuff, and I just adored him as a second teacher. And there were others whose names I can't remember
sure.
right now, but there were a few others.
So let's talk about that first year when you were pursuing journalism, you know, because you said, I would like to do this. Give me a shot. What did that look like for you?
I landed my first job in Dover in Morris County at a 25,000 circulation paper, and I had a wonderful mentor there, and I quickly landed the top beat assignment, the municipal government. And I have to tell you, I worked with her on a project like 2 years out of school that sent some politicians to jail on bribery conspiracy charges.
Oh, congratulations.
I was hooked.
Yeah. I was hooked. I learned how to do investigative reporting on that paper. And
wow.
I joke that was my master's degree, the 4 years I spent there.
Oh, yeah, that's a perfect amount of time.
I would have gotten so hooked into something like that. Once you have that experience, and have that. I mean, that's transformational.
It was.
Any other good stories from your time there that you recall?
And well, in Dover, let me think. That's the biggest one that I remember telling my students.
Yeah.
Other than the influence of what a senior reporter can do for you if you're willing to do the work.
And then what happens? What happened after that sort of?
Then I went to the Atlantic City Press for 2 years because I always wanted to work down the shore, and you know, mom and dad said, not happen.
I'm seeing a little trend here of you bucking your parents.
And I worked there for 2 years, and I did a couple stories that led to grand jury investigations. I mean, this investigative journalism thing was, I kept looking
really
in data. And then after 2 years, the Star-Ledger hired me to be the Atlantic City Bureau Chief in 1978, the year casino gambling came to town.
Ooh, fun.
Now, is the Star? Now, I am a South Jersey cat. I know of the Star Ledger, and I know it was a big paper back in the day. Is it still sort of like the what?
Back in the day, it was the 14th largest paper in the country with a daily circulation of 450,000 and Sunday at 650.
I feel like I grew up in Central Jersey, so like my paper at the convenience store in the room was Asbury Park Press.
Oh, I thought that was your paper. I thought that's what I was looking
at. Asbury Park Press was kind of
so
like,
I worked my way up. I worked my way up to a major newspaper. And then I shifted gears. I got married, and we moved to Memphis as our big adventure.
All right.
And was that an adventure?
Memphis is kind of like the Atlantic City of the South, I think.
Well, I never expected to live west of the Appalachian Mountains.
What took you to Mississippi? What was there?
Well, you know how this sometimes goes. Husband to left. Anyhow, when I got to Memphis, I said, well, I can't. He worked at the local paper, and so I couldn't work there. And I said, well, what am I going to do? I started talking to people at broadcasts. And they said, well, we don't have any openings, but if you go to the University of Memphis and take a class in broadcast writing, you know, you'll be ready. And I did. And so they hired me to teach the class, and now I became an academic.
Wow.
Did you miss, like, when you got back in the classroom, had you missed it?
Miss being in the classroom?
Yeah.
I love teaching. And that's what my mom said, told you so.
Yeah.
You know, and so I taught at the University of Memphis almost 15 years as an instructor. My job title changed every year depending on who was funding me.
Okay. At least somebody was funding you.
And then,
is the phone still ringing? You know what I mean, Kathleen? When it doesn't ring anymore, that's when you're in trouble.
And then, actually, I got my master's and my doctorate there, both paid for through grants through the university. Wow. And that was one of my dad's rules. If someone's going to pay for you to go to school, your hand better be raised.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
And so then I had to get a real job, a full-time job because of personal situations. And the University of Memphis, University of Mississippi hired me because I had developed a specialty in what we called then computer-assisted reporting, is now known as data journalism.
Okay.
I.e. investigative type reporting using computer tools. And so I've been there for 25 years.
So you must love it. So from middle school kids, which is, I have to say, I like middle school kids, too. I think sometimes they get a bad rap, but I think they're a fun age. But to go from teaching middle school kids to teaching college students, or an interest in middle school kids to college students, that must have been quite a leap. Did you enjoy the classroom with students?
By that point, you know, that wasn't an issue. I enjoyed the interaction with young adults.
Yeah.
Also, I had matured. I grew older.
Yeah, sure.
I grew more confident in my skills.
Mm-hmm. And could you see a young Kathleen in the classroom that you were teaching?
Often.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see the shy kid in the class, and you see the kids who's not so sure, and you reach out to them and check in with them. Always.
So that was you in Glassboro. You were the shy kid that came from Phillipsburg that knew you didn't know anybody here.
Right. Who had to sit in the front row because she wore glasses and couldn't see the board.
That's okay. We all have those problems.
Yeah. I've been wearing glasses as long as I can remember.
Well, me too.
Yeah. But it was as a kid. I mean, it's kind of funny because when you think about it, so many people wear glasses. But as a kid or a young adult, it's like, it's hard.
Yeah. You don't get dates. I'm sorry.
Now, I have to say, you were coming from this you know, from New Jersey, and you're going down south, did anybody, I'm sure you picked up some accents while you were down there. Did anybody say, what part of New York are you from when you were down?
Always. They always, they think I'm from New York quite frequently.
Well, I don't hear any accent in you now, for as many years as you've been down there.
You actually never lose your accent that you were born with. Your accent is pretty well developed before you start school.
Wow.
I've picked up mannerisms. I say you all. I'll say yes, ma'am, more frequently.
Yeah.
But people know immediately, they go, you're not from here, are you?
Well, I would never even think that you couldn't, like, change. Because sometimes I've been in, so I grew up in Central Jersey, probably have more of a North Jersey accent. But when I came to South Jersey, I've been in South Jersey since I came here. I feel like now I kind of talk a little bit more South Jersey, but.
You're still a little fast, but you're still on pace for, like, Philly. I think you're good.
Oh, Philly?
Yeah.
No.
No, you're good. You're good. See, I always wanted to go to London, though, and then come back with an accent. So now that kind of, like, it's going to kill that whole thing for me now.
Yeah, probably.
I really wanted that.
Well, you could pretend.
Okay. It comes out Australian.
Actually, if you go to London and you speak like an American, maybe people will just love that about you. Probably I don't think people love Americans.
No.
But I was going to say, wouldn't that be nice if you went and they were like, oh, you sound like an American. Tell us more.
No, it's totally different. It's totally different. All right, so now you're now, but now how many years have you been now at University of Mississippi?
25.
25 years. And obviously the classes have evolved, the students have evolved. Can you sort of talk about that?
How the classes, well, yes, the students today don't have as much confidence as the other students. And we tend to attribute it to the pandemic or a greater awareness of mental health issues. We've had a big push on campus for mental health issues this year. And such that I now include on my syllabus a paragraph, if you're having mental health issues, here's where you go for resources.
Mm. That's great that you include that.
And we've never had to do, that's new.
Yeah.
That's new. And I'm more inclined to give grace. You know, if I say, okay, all right, I don't take late papers. Okay, I'll take your late paper because you just told me this story and it seems like,
there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And, of course, the technology has changed significantly in terms of teaching online and accessing online.
How about the – I'm always curious to hear from folks like yourself. How about the writing skills themselves? Because, we're in such a texty world now, short sentences, and really, I guess – the traditional maybe syntax that maybe we all learned growing up. Well, it's still taught in the classrooms, I'm sure of that. You know, these kids adopt these habits on these things. I'm pointing to my phone and this is the podcast. But like, so are you seeing any like bad habits that you're having to break with students? Are you seeing any of that?
Well, certainly with spell check, Grammarly, grammar checks, you don't really see those weaknesses that we used to see.
Oh, wow.
No. The big challenge right now is, what is it called, ChatGPT.
Yes.
We're a big fan.
Yeah.
I know.
But
the
challenge
you probably don't
is
like that, but.
I can recognize it when it's used, but I can't prove it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's such a mechanical language, and I've had to restructure my whole syllabus to ensure that the work comes from their own research, which I didn't have to do before. And this is a hoop. For their final exam, I'm teaching media history. I told them, you're going to have to get a blue book. They're going to have to handwrite.
A composition book?
And one of my students go, what's a blue
book? Oh, my gosh. I love those, and I hated those at the same time.
I know, they're
the
worst.
No, yeah. I hated those, but the idea of filling that thing, when I walked up to the professor and put that down on the desk here, and it was completely full of ink, I was like, oh, I did something. And then usually the teacher was like, yeah, you gave me a C.
No.
There was some accomplishment there.
But I feel like I have to because of the research-based facet of the class that artificial intelligence, they could just substitute it. And for now, I hope we come up with a better answer, but that's this semester, this year.
Now, you're an author, and that your most recent book is on AI, am I right?
No.
No? Did I make that up?
My most recent book is Math Tools for Journalists.
Oh, Math Tools.
With AI fused as a subject.
As a new chapter.
Just kidding.
So I initially wrote Math Tools for Journalists in the early 2000s. A colleague was going to co-write it, actually. I think he said that to get me going. Our accrediting council was very concerned about the math skills of journalists and had made it a standard to evaluate journalism departments and schools in terms of what they were doing for math. Now, that's interesting because you think math and journalism.
Yeah, I can't make the connection.
Oh, yeah. Me. Property taxes, budgets, all salaries, all sorts of information is for math. And if you can't do simple percentage increases, we were really good about writing around it.
Yeah.
Really good, because our editors couldn't do it either. So the accrediting council called on an emphasis and inclusion of math. And so I was convinced to write a math book for journalists. And I did. And it was quite popular. It sold over 8,000 copies.
Wow.
And so I received the rights back this year. And my husband is a publisher, a small print publisher, and he said, let's bring out a third edition.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did this summer.
Oh, wow. So you were busy this summer.
Yeah.
And so are you going to be I know you're retiring soon. Are you going to be exploring the author space more, maybe going into different spaces?
I have a journal article I wish to finish, and I have a book idea I want to explore further that comes straight out of my teaching. So I teach at the University of Memphis, known as Ole Miss. And many people don't make that connection. They know the Ole Miss for sports.
Yes.
Not so much. In 1962, James Meredith integrated the university. He was the first African-American to integrate any public school in Mississippi. President Kennedy had to call out the U.S. Army in order to get him admitted. A riot broke out on campus. Right. So, and a reporter was killed. He was the first and only reporter killed during the whole civil rights era. He was shot in the back from a foot away, probably by the KKK.
Wow.
So the anniversary was last fall, and my students in a class called Press in the South, we decided to do a study to see how the black press covered James Meredith. Because in anything I read, you'd get a paragraph. And I always get annoyed when you get a paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did. Based on the resources we had at the time. And we got three papers that were presented at academic conferences. I now want to expand it into a journal article, and I have to go visit archives to do that. So that's one of my projects. I am known on campus as the advocate for Paul Guillard, the French reporter who was murdered. I was the chapter advisor for our Society of Professional Journalists, and we have an historical plaque designation on campus for the 300-plus reporters who had covered the riot. Mm. People such as Dan Rather did his first national broadcast, and other people made their names there. And we also have a memorial bench for Paul Guillard. And so that's what I'm known for best on campus, is that plaque in front of the building, the historical plaque. But that has also led to a lot of civil rights research. The major project is to do the rest of the black press research and do a journal article for that. Oh, the other one is I'm thinking of a book for media history that reflects better DEI issues.
Mm.
The traditional media history books, women get a little box. African Americans get a little box. Minorities aren't included in this story of media history in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I threw out the book in my class when I first taught it 2 years ago, going for readings and podcasts and individual research. And I'm thinking some kind of project that will tell the story of American journalism, not just through the East Coast white elites, but also through the voices of women and minorities.
I feel like you kind of got your voice here, right?
Yes.
Right? This was this the first thing that you did coming to Glassboro? Was that kind of the first time you expressed your voice? I'm just wondering if there's kind of like a connection of why civil rights and speaking up for people that maybe aren't speaking, it still remains like a constant for you throughout your career of making sure those voices are heard.
It's a very personal story in many ways. When I was in high school, my older brother became disabled from a brain tumor. Mm-hmm. And at that time, people with disabilities had no rights. Literally, when my parents sought to get him enrolled in school and show, the superintendent said, oh, well, he's 16, he can drop out. And my parents said, oh, no. And when my father showed him a copy of the state constitution that said every child in New Jersey is entitled to a free and public education, he said, who gave you that?
Mm.
Wow.
So my parents went to Trenton and eventually got him the services he needed. So there's that disability rights thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then very sadly, my oldest son was severely disabled from severe autism. And I remember going to an autism society meeting, and a man there said, well, I've been working on this committee for 14 years. I looked at him and said, and I've been working since I was 14 years old.
Mm.
Yeah, I love that.
So I've asked that by my students,
mm-hmm.
and I tell them both portions of that story, and I say, in many ways, we're in the same church, but different pews.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And so I remember my mom asked me, I said, Mom, if I'd been in the East Coast, I probably would have been in Appalachia doing the same thing. That is just my life experience. And of course, the work I did at the YWCA, I was with the diverse people there.
Mm-hmm.
To me, diversity was life.
Yeah, it was normal.
It was normal.
It was very normal.
Yeah. So that's a long answer to your question. But we carry with us all our life experiences, and we make our choices as we go, which path we're going to take. And we have to take responsibility for our choices. And for me, it apparently the choices I made had to do with those whose voices cannot be heard. And that starts with journalism. All our stories that we write, we are telling people stories and giving them a voice because we know how to connect with government. The average citizen doesn't know how.
Yeah.
I think there's a ton of, I think what's exciting about journalism and just writing in general and communications is the fact that there are so many opportunities now for students that may, before the path was, all right, you want to be a journalist, so you're going to be in a newspaper or you're going to be, now there's so much need for content and there's so many different avenues that they can pursue that it's really a rich field.
It is. And we have lots of platforms for sharing, some not so good, some very good,
yep.
But we also can reach people. There's no excuse for writing a story that doesn't have good sources. Go to Google. You can find...
Not ChatGPT, Google.
No, and you can find a source, an expert on anything, and you can contact them. We're not limited to our geographic area.
Right.
Anymore. So we can write better stories with greater depth and breadth than anything I ever could have written.
And I think journalism is, I think over the past maybe, you know, 5-8 years, we've seen the importance of journalism and how important it is to maintain that as a field,
yes.
A well-respected field.
If we lose journalism, we lose democracy. That's the bottom line on that. Because the First Amendment charges us to monitor the actions of government and institutions, and we are the gatekeepers. At least that's how I view it.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
So one of the choices you made, obviously, was coming here today, and the other one was going out before our interview to go peruse the campus a little bit, show off Bunce Hall. Tell us about some of the memories that sort of flooded back before you stepped behind the mic there.
Well, we walked into Bunce Hall, and I told my husband, showed him the green where graduation is, and where I sat. I said, you know where I sat. His last name is Wells. I said, you know, those of us at the end of the alphabet, we know our place in life.
Yeah. I went Wickham from, and a Wells.
Woodruff and Wickham. Yeah. I mean, I just can't move up.
No.
And I said, and I told him, you know, the story of graduation, and we walked into Bunce Hall, and it just flooded with memories because almost all classes at that time were in Bunce Hall. And I think there were two other academic buildings that came online. Glassford was growing rapidly then. In fact, my dorm was Mimosa Hall. My dorm was so new. Yeah. We didn't have shower curtains for a week.
Oh, my wow. God.
What a fun way to enter college. Yeah. Everybody, you didn't know, but you get to shower in front of everybody.
Well, no, because I had suites. It was three rooms and shared a bathroom.
Yeah, that's a lot. So yeah. I'd be a little upset if I didn't have a shower curtain.
Yeah, but so we were growing fast there.
Yeah.
And the gym was new. I think Wilson Hall was new. And the field, where all the athletic fields, was a muddy field.
Mm. What's great is they've digitized all of the yearbooks, so you can see the old athletics fields in the yearbook pictures. And it is. It was just all torn up.
And you mentioned in a dormitory, I only got to live in a dorm a year, freshman year. We didn't have enough space.
Okay.
So you entered a lottery. And if you were lucky, you got a second year in a dorm. We essentially lived in rooming houses, not boarding. Boarding means you get food. So, but everyone in town rented out rooms.
Okay.
Do you remember
their house? Like, did you live with a family?
Well, essentially, yes.
Wow.
But you didn't interact with the family.
Okay,
it's like the first version of Airbnb.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. It was. And so we lived in a little house on the other side of the athletic field. It's not there anymore. It was called Blue Jay Acres. And so
it's not there anymore? No. I was going to say we should go there after this.
No, it's not there. I checked it out. And so frequently, so we walked. We walked over to the cafeteria. We didn't get food.
That's kind of a wild thought that you just go live. Like, imagine now if we had students and we're like, go find a local family to hang with, but don't talk to them.
Yeah. But, no.
To me, it sounds amazing. I don't know. No, but so what's happening now for folks listening who maybe not back to the borough in some time, the perimeter of the campus really is becoming, you know, all students now as some of the locals decided to rent out their houses and such. So there's no, obviously we have plenty of housing on campus. It's just a matter of these, you know, young cats want to sort of do their own thing off campus there and have their own life. So they are living in these houses again. So
okay.
It's kind of funny how like history has not repeated itself, but there's just generations of alums that are maybe in the same dwelling. So,
and that was one thing as we were driving around, and I said there's no separation here between town and campus.
No,
it is all
blended.
Campus.
Yeah.
It's blended.
Yeah,
and I said it has grown into a classic college town.
Are you making this an annual return to campus? Or?
Well, one of the reasons we came last year and this year is I judged the National Journalism Headliners in Atlantic City, and so we tagged it onto it.
Is it always in Atlantic City?
Yes, it is initially sponsored by the Press Club of Atlantic City, and it was established, well, this is our 90th year. I think it's older than the Pulitzers. And we have, takes a week to judge 80 categories across all platforms.
Wow.
And so I initially contacted, I think the journalism department that probably doing, I wanted to do a lecture on campus.
Yeah.
All right, that's why. All right, I'll be honest. I wanted to have a chance. I really thought that that was the initial way I thought I could interact with campus because we have guest lectures all the time.
Yeah.
Alum come back all the time. And I thought, well, you know, I have a story to tell. And and that was what the initial contact was. So we haven't gotten to that, been able to do that, but I got to do a podcast.
Yeah.
So,
and Kathy,
find ways for you.
I don't want to brag, Jess.
Go ahead, brag.
I was a headliner winner.
Excellent.
Thanks for whatever you did back then, because it helped.
Okay. And going back to Atlantic City to judge, that's like going back to your early journalism
roots. It is.
That's so cool. It's like really full circle to be able to keep doing that.
And I used to always tell my family, I need salt and sand in the summer.
Oh my gosh, me and, too, Kathy.
And just remember, I'll remember at Christmas.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of, it's in our blood. If you're from Jersey, We're the only ones to stay down the shore.
Yes.
I agree. I grew up in Central Jersey, 10 minutes from a beach, moved here. I'm at least an hour from any beach. And that's even a struggle. I mean, I'm lucky. Mm-hmm. Some people aren't even that close. But that's even a struggle because I'm like, I used to drive 10 minutes and be able to put my feet in the sand. So now anytime I'm like sort of within a few miles of a beach, I'm like, must stop and smell the ocean, must put my feet in the sand. Like, I agree. I need to be beachside in my retirement. That's my goal.
We're glad to have you back here and experiencing the campus, and we can't wait to have you back for more years moving forward.
Tomorrow I'm going to get a pork roll sandwich.
Yes. Love it.
Now, Kathleen did a lot of good things there, Jess. Amazing things. Great career and such. Like, I think but one of the big takeaways that I'm going to come away with is she calls it pork roll.
Yes. Well, okay. Also, can we talk through that a little bit?
Because, a little bit.
Okay. Pork roll is what I say. I'm from Central Jersey. She's from North Jersey. And you also say pork roll, and you're from PA. So, like, who are the people saying Taylor Ham?
It's everybody from, like, Trenton and up, I think.
No. I grew up Trenton and up.
All right. It's everybody north of Trenton and up.
Okay.
Is that better?
Well, she was north. That's what I'm saying.
She was Phillipsburg.
We've covered all the, like, three areas of the state, and we all said pork roll. So I'm just wondering who the weirdos are that say Taylor Ham. So
I'm not sure.
Probably some of our listeners. So we won't butcher that too much. But she was lovely. So now Dr. Wickham is going to be retiring.
Yep. And she's going to have plenty of time to do some other things, which she's going to enjoy. She's going to write. She's going to write some more.
Sounds like she's got a lot of ideas.
Yeah. Journalism, a couple books.
Mm-hmm. And we talked to her a little bit off air. We're going to get her back. We are going to get her that guest lecture that she's hoping.
Well, you promised her that, so you got to get her back.
I mean, listen, between the team, we'll be able to get her back in a classroom because she's got such great classroom experience. Yeah. We got to get our students.
Yeah, we know a few people. We can make it work.
Yeah, we'll pull some strings for Dr. Wickham, who was on today's show. We loved having her. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, you can visit go.rowan.edu/btbgguest.
You've been listening to Beyond the Brown and Gold on Rowan Radio 89.7 WGLS FM. You can find more episodes on your favorite podcasting platforms by searching for Beyond the Brown and Gold or Rowan Radio On Demand.